Welcome back to the second live episode of the DeSoto podcast, this time with new and improved mics. We took on board the comments, which said that the audio quality was awful, and we've been instructed to stay very close to the mics, and we've also bought new ones.
It's hard to be relaxed.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Don't you relax, your belly will push the table off the thing.
I'm surprised you can even reach your mic. You sat on a pile of phone books, that's what you can't see under the table. But yeah, I think people misunderstood what we were saying about the mics in the last one, because it said someone left a comment with something like $2,000 on those mics. And no, what I was saying was Hector's mics were $2,000. Ours were £60. But we've moved up. These are better. These are like 200.
Ooh.
So we've gone up to road mics now. So in the next episode, you'll probably see us with yet another set of mics. So one at a time. And then eventually we'll just have to carpet this room. And then after we've spent 50 grand, you might have above par audio quality.
That's so, the dream.
Good roadmap.
Yeah.
Well, today I think we want to kind of keep this episode focused on how bad Modern Warfare is. Now, that's a pretty broad statement, and that's not necessarily our words, but pretty much everyone that's played the game. Josh, you probably had the most experience out of us three playing it.
I've been very reserved on. Well, obviously, I go to you guys and I'll on WhatsApp you two about how much I dislike it, and then in order to avoid me from tweeting it, because obviously we want to make friends. So obviously that's why we're doing a podcast and why we hate it. But yeah, it's. Also, as a casual player now, I play free-for-all all the time. And it's just an absolute camp fest. Shotguns shoot from like a mile away and whatnot. The game is pretty well built. The graphics like are really good, obviously. These are quite low-tier stuff for me, I would say. But you can just tell it's a really well-built game. But the most frustrating thing of all, and I think it's something that all three of us share, is don't you just hate it when you feel like the developers have created something for them or someone's written something for them and not their audience? And I think that's what's happened here. They've all, you know, basically, it's a little bit of fart-smelling, maybe. Maybe a little bit accusational here, but I think they've just created something that they think would be good if they were playing it, but what is not at all good to play for the user, which is a shame because the build is actually really good.
Well, I mean, with regards to the build, what I've seen a lot of, though, is evidence that it's actually not as well built as it might
look.
Well,
I wouldn't notice that because obviously I don't play pro anymore, do I? So I'm never going to notice the details.
So obviously you have like different Hertz games, and apparently this is 12 Hertz in private games. So
it means nothing to me.
Essentially, when like someone's jump, if you say jump off something, it's like that's how it moves. So if you're shooting with a gun, you're going to miss some bullets go missing because the character isn't actually where you think
really?
It is because of how it is.
There's one thing I do know on stuff like Street Fighter and Smash and all that, the players are so fucking good that they read every frame. So there must be something equivalent in shooters, right? That they notice when you're playing at the finest margin.
I know that there's a few interviews with the developers. It must be tough because some of the developers basically came out and said that they feel like they can't make the game they want to make entirely because it has to cater to esports.
And they've got, three-year cycle?
This is one of the tough things about Call of Duty, I think, that a lot of developers now, the idea of being involved in esports and having this community that thrives around your game is like the dream for them. But for a lot of games, including Call of Duty when it first started out, the esports element of it was organic. No one was thinking when they were making COD 4, you know, this is going to have esports. And as time went on, I think they've almost given too much thought to it, but they don't really understand what esports players fully want.
And, does anyone?
You know, and, well, exactly. And then half the time they're having to balance, you know, putting in gimmicks and stuff like that with how's this going to work. And then, you know, they want the game to be played in a certain way. And it sounds crazy, but to me, and you know, they probably think we make the game, we know best. But I think the people who play it the most know end up knowing best.
Well, they know how best to get it out in 3 years. We don't know how necessarily best to make the perfect esports game, do they?
Yeah, I think if you watch that interview about where they're saying about, you know, they don't like these, they basically sort of resent the fact that it has to be an esport. And so,
but what evidence is that it's esports ready at all? I mean, if you look at the maps, they're all massive. There's lots of elements of it which are kind of campy. It doesn't cater to an esports game, which is, you know, 3-lane clean maps, you know, level weapons. That's just not a thing. And it's like every single year the developers go on about esports, and it's like you never ever cater for esports.
But they said they're catering
for, didn't they say in that interview, they said the main thing they said, which only came out, I think it was like a pre-game interview,
later.
And it was like 2 months before, so it must have been in, what was it, released October, so it must have been like August or sometime like that. And two of the developers, and they basically said, we've created the maps with safe spaces for camping players.
I was going to say that.
And it's safe spaces. What fucking world we live in?
Unfortunate choice of words, though, as well.
This goes back to
that is awful, isn't it? It's like Kevin Flynn, who, you know, I'll consider, you know, we're friends with, at the very least, when he was, you know, in the esports team at Acti, and he tweeted something about, you know, it was justifying being a camper. I'm like, no, mate. That you don't. if you want to elevate a game, surely there's got to be an artistic component to it where you want people to get better. And giving people the option to run claymores and camp is not how you elevate the general culture.
That's obviously why the shotgun is so, because they want that instant gratification that they want it so anyone can get in a game and get a kill. But my, like, the thing that I would use for evidence that this isn't actually that important. Firstly, I've never known people complain about Call of Duty being too hard because it isn't. And really, you know, new players are only new players for a short amount of time. And then all of a sudden they get to grips with the game. And there should be a learning curve because you want to grow into the game. And as you become better at it, be rewarded on it. You don't want it to always just reward new people who don't become new. But also, the biggest game for a good while is Fortnite. I don't know how much you two played Fortnite.
It's hard.
I've only played a handful of games. It's well hard when you first play it. My cousin gave me it. And obviously, at that time, I'd seen it been played a lot, but I'd never actually played a round of it.
Yeah.
And he was a fairly handy player. But I'm running along. You're getting killed from nowhere, or someone's just like builds really quickly in front of you. And in the first few games, especially if you're not playing it at the very start of the game when people are getting to grips with it, by this point, everyone is actually a good builder. And this was a number of years ago now, or at least a decent builder. Whereas I didn't even get to grips with it. I was just running and shooting people and trying to get, like, steal a kill. And then someone had built in front of me and I'd just think, I've got no chance of surviving this. So I'd try to run off or I'd die. But there's no instant gratification in that game. You've got to get into it. But that's been the biggest game, even with kids who you'd think would be the quickest to give up and be impatient. They've been willing to grow into Fortnite and become better players. And, you know, they've idolized people like Myth, for example. I think he got famous initially because he was like the first master builder. Yeah. And then people like him, all of a sudden they were put on a pedestal because they were so good. Whereas if you almost make the playing field completely level to the point where the top people, if you were to put a people in like a graph, the top people would only be slightly better than the people who are picking the game up and putting it in the console for the first time. Yeah. You don't get that. No one can really stand out.
I think the point is that if you challenge people to be better, they'll take the challenge, right? Assuming the game is good enough. And that was Fortnite was definitely proof of that. And COD is absolutely proof of the offer. If anything, COD, I'm not going to lie, feels a little bit like it's been tailored to older people now who just can't be asked.
If you think about it, like kids coming up now, most kids have been playing games since like 4, 5, 6. Like when I was a kid, at the first FPS I ever played, I probably was about 12 or 13, like because of the way technology came out. Like kids nowadays, I mean, their hand-eye coordination is even better than ever. So again, I think you're right. It's not even catering for kids. It's almost catering, no offense, for Kevin Flynn's.
The thing is, if you go back in the day, like, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people like Skump became popular. But he had like a long-running series and it was a thing where he would come in the room and he'd be mint and he'd absolutely demolish people in public games. If you don't have a learning curve, you can't do that. You know, if Skump rounds the corner and there's a claymore hidden, like, you know, around the corner, he just blows up. They've had claymores. I remember a COD a few years ago where they had bouncing betties. And I remember thinking at the time, the bouncing betties are ruining my fun in that game. Because there's absolutely no skill to just planting something and getting lucky that someone runs around the corner.
None at all.
You better believe I'll still put them down.
It's just putting claymores down and then a shotgun where they only have to be one pixel of them on your screen and you die and you could be at the other side of the universe. But like, what's the point in that?
When I started playing games as well, one of the first FPSs that I really got into was Rainbow, and obviously which is where we all met. And when I was playing Rainbow, I was in a lobby with people and there was like, there was someone came in from like one of the top teams at the time and I didn't know anything about it. And he came in, he absolutely destroyed everybody. And I was like, wow, I want to learn more. Like, I want to understand how he's so good. Like that, I was actually interested. Mm. If I went in that lobby and then I didn't actually know anything, like you don't even know how many, you know, they've released DLC now where you can see how many deaths you get in the game because it's all like, it's on your watch. But you can't see how many deaths you get unless you're in Search and Destroy. So people don't even know how good they're doing.
Yeah.
They don't even know how, like...
People used to buzz off your KD. Why would that be a thing? Like, people... Back in the day, people would always say, like, what's your KD?
Yeah.
And over time, in the esports scene, you see it less because the people that you're interacting with less. But I bet people still do it on a casual level.
Yeah, you used to go into game or something and they'd be like, oh, yeah, do you play, like, Call of Duty or Rainbow, whatever, but like, yeah, but oh, what's your KD? And I'd be like, because obviously, esports at the time, he'd be like, KD, you know what I mean? Like, no one counts the KD, but like, that is a common thing. But again, people don't know, people aren't going, oh, yeah, what score did you get in that TDM? No one gives a
if
fuck.
You care about KD, you're probably not going to, you know, be anywhere near the kind of players that, you know, in an esports context,
exactly.
The tough thing for the developers is no doubt that even though they're in a 3-year cycle. Because Call of Duty comes out every year, you get panned by the mainstream press if you don't revolutionize enough, if it's effectively the exact same game again. And the problem is when a good version comes out, they can't stick on it, so then you've got to change it all again, and the maps have more or less got to be completely redone every year.
In a way, it's just all a little bit unambitious from what was a revolutionary game, you know, and obviously it propelled, you know, Activision, at the very least in my eyes, as one of the top tier developers. And obviously, since a decade later, they've lacked. Yes, there was the exoskeletons and whatnot, but really, they've lacked any kind of ambition that got them here in the first place. And it is, you obviously are going to hold someone like Activision to create this multi-billion-dollar franchise to higher standards than someone else. And I think they should be more ambitious than what they're doing now. Let's be honest, it's gone from a joke where 5 years ago, COD's always repackaged to COD's always fucking repackaged. It's literally the same thing. Yeah. We're to the point where Chris will ask me, "Oh, have you got a new COD?" I'm like, "Yeah, played it." He's like, "What's it like?" I'm like, "It's like COD." And that used to be a hallmark of quality.
Yeah.
Now it's tired.
But it's not even a hallmark of quality now. The time, these games, you know, the new Call of Duties are coming out, and you know, we were discussing before we started recording, you know, they've done this, the most ambitious DLC ever. You know, it's free. And realistically, I think these are all things that probably would have been in the game at launch, but they've probably run out of time. And it's like, you know, we hold back some stuff that we now add into it. You're adding new game types. That obviously should have been in there from the off. Yeah, game types.
Like CTFs.
Well, there's an argument for maps, because we were saying about Red Dead. I haven't played it, but someone or a friend of ours was talking about how... actually, I read it. It takes you long to release DLC because they're all obsessed by the detail. Now, for a single-player game, I can absolutely understand the charm of the finer details. For multiplayer, is adding that stupid inanimate fixed box that isn't going to move when you run into it, is that actually worth delaying back the whole, you know, the entire release or creating it because you want to focus on every single little detail? Get rid of a ton of the waffling maps, you know, that basically clearly takes a lot of time to develop, but which the game on a multiplayer context does not need.
Yeah, this has long been an issue with COD for me, is that there should be a finite number of places you can get shot from, but sometimes you're running along and you're running past a 50-star hotel where every window you can go out of, and it's like, what's the fun in that? Someone spent 90 minutes climbing to the middle floor just so they can get a cheeky shot on you. It's just like, strip it down, keep it clean, people. And then, but then, you know, how exciting is it when someone actually does pull off a good shot? You're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whereas if anyone can do anything, what's the point? There is no reward past a very limited time frame there.
You know what I find crazy as well, when it comes to last year, obviously Black Ops 4, they had Battle Royale, super popular, everyone loved it. Loads of people played it, like streamers, because again, that's something that's like keeps people going back, because it's, you know, that Battle Royale is essentially perfect for streaming, because it's like that anticipation of that one life over the course of the game to then see if someone wins. And yet they released this game knowing full well that Battle Royale is the thing that everyone wants, streamers want, everyone, and yet they don't release it in this game. And now what you find is people like Teep, Merc, Maven, you know, Replays, people who are actually like really getting big at streaming for Call of Duty, they've gone back to that.
Yeah.
And they've gone back to Black Ops 4 to play Blackout.
Mm.
It's crazy. Like, why wouldn't you include it? Why would you hinder your own game? For me, it's either it just screams there's massive issues there for me. I think there's a massive problem within Activision. Is that you? I mean, they've got rid of Sledgehammer recently as one of the studios. So now, they announced that Sledgehammer just going to become like basically helping in the cycle. Yeah, rather than be this 3-year cycle.
You'd love to know, was that performance based, or was it because they were too bloated?
Well, I think they imploded on themselves after the last game, which obviously wasn't received very well.
Mike Cohen, he got sent to the background, didn't he? Because obviously he was like a Vonderhaar, he was the face of it.
Yeah.
Infinity War, I don't think they've ever had anyone like that, at least not as public. But they've kind of stopped this whole thing right now, where they have this kind of post-demand, don't they?
Probably
because he got a load of abuse.
Well, yeah, because I mean, look at Vonderhaar. He obviously lost his head a bit on Twitter. Yeah. He kept deleting his profile. He kept like going back and forward.
He was wearing an Optic jersey, so I think he made his own bed a little bit, you know, to some extent. But
it's tough because...
But talking about that, though, sorry. So the guy that people kind of recognize for Infinity Ward at the moment is that David Michener, right?
Right.
So he's on Twitter. And, you know, he obviously used to reply to certain people, and him and that Ashley Vulcan girl, they posted every now and then. So it takes Ninja to go, obviously one of the biggest streamers in the world, goes and tweets about gunfight and how it's missing, and he replied to it. So then all the COD pros are going, you know, obviously just pandering to Ninja. So then they're all tweet, like Aix is tweeting Ninja going, can you ask about the competitive playlist? Because I'm really, because you're the only reason it'll get kind of responded to. So yeah.
Well, it's tough because, going back to Vonderhaar, like, on the one hand, Vonderhaar, he laps up the attention. He loves the fact that, you know, the community call him, you know, in Vonderhaar we trust, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, who wouldn't? And, you know, and it was that kind of thing is going to massage your ego. On the flip side, then you become a target for everything bad. And I remember, well, yeah, as you said, even fairly recently, like, you know, at the very back end of Black Ops cycle, the recent one, you know, people are, some of the comments on Vonderhaar stuff saying when he changed this, when he's saying this, but people are doing it in the most aggressive way. You know, and that's just like the other stuff, his boosts his ego. That is going to really damage his ego.
Mm.
And, you know, a lot of it, well, Vonderhaar is just the face of it. The worst I remember with Call of Duty was, what was that guy called? He was just the community manager. And I don't know if they got rid of this role as a result of it. It was like, someone tells me it was like Robert or something like that.
Oh, Robert Bowling.
Yeah.
4-0.
I hope he was super well paid him.
I met him recently, actually.
Yeah, because he's no longer with Call of Duty, but he wasn't even a developer as far as I'm aware. He was just the face of it. And people were basically saying,
even
like,
now, people still go, whenever they see his name mentioned or something, they're like, oh, he ruined Call of Duty.
They'll be like wishing death upon him because the game wasn't exactly as they wanted.
It's mental.
And it's like, he would have had literally no impact on it at all. He'd just be a middleman. Well, and people were wanting him dead.
I can only imagine because... if you even just, so for example, we've obviously got a lot of different social accounts on Twitter for different games, you know, stuff like Super Smash, Titanfall blog,
Overwatch.
Fortnite. And you should see the DMs people send us thinking, the DMs and the emails, people thinking that we actually like create the game. And some of them are truly awful as well, like threats, people just swearing, calling your names.
It's good
to It's just hilarious. And you're like, this is, imagine actually being someone who is the face. You're just going to get so much abuse constantly. And I reckon it, you know, for people like Vonderhaar, I wouldn't be...
Thing is, those people thinking that it is the real account, though, is a good thing because that's how we get those followers.
But the thing is...
Shout out to the dumb people following us.
It's the balance of it because on the one hand, you know, you're creating a game will, you know, you're going to, even if it's something that's as commercial as Call of Duty is commercially driven, you're still going to take it personally. You've still put a lot of hours into it. These people that are in this office working with Vonderhaar, whoever, are still going to be his close friends.
That's exactly why colleagues. I'm mindful of saying it on Twitter. You always want to give a bit. We even tell our writers, by the way, you know, you got to find a way to give a bit. If you're going to criticize something, be constructive. Yeah. As probably a bit of a golden rule in this day and age, especially in the advent of social. I always hold myself back because as much as I want to tell people or tell developers what the you know, have you done to this game? If I'm not offering anything constructive, you've got to remember that they probably dedicated last 3 years to that
there's
and
still
more.
People so. At the end of the day, and I think people forget on social media, there's like a disconnect with there is a person at the other side of it. I mean, you know, we're on a bit of a tangent here, but my brother, he's friends with like a guy who's like a UK artist, and the amount of people just like are out to get him. And they think that they're really funny by constantly like tweeting him with just, you know, with insults and stuff. And he's like, what the hell have I done to this person? And they're loving it.
You know what happened though? Someone like that, or, you know, you see it a lot with streamers or in YouTube comments, and people go and they'll slag off a streamer or they'll say some shit to them. And then they'll reply and the person then will go, oh, I didn't mean it, pal. I'm such a huge fan.
Or they'll be like, they'll take a picture with him as soon as the first opportunity. There was one, the same person, go off the tangent here. There's like, he's in his car with his kid, right? And this like minibus full of people pull up next to him and they're giving him stick through the window. So like he loses cool a bit and gets out of the car and he's like, what the hell? And you see these lads are like laughing at it. They filmed it and they locked the door. And there's six of them and just him. They locked the door and then post it online as if it's going to show him up. Yeah. And everyone's like, you shit your pants there,
but that's mate. Just, and then it's even worse on the internet.
It's so bad.
Times 100. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's the problem with social media is that it's people just think, and you know, sometimes I've found myself kind of like, I wouldn't necessarily say it, I like slag people off, but you know, in the past, I might have replied to someone that I didn't agree with.
Yeah.
But now I've kind of got to the stage.
Make sure you delete
like,
that Twitter history, mate. All over it.
On the flip side of this, you know, people like Vonderhaar and the people behind Call of Duty and Activision stuff are being insanely well compensated for the work, as they should be. They've earned a lot of money for doing it. And, you know, but the game isn't free. It's not like they're doing us a favor by putting it out. They're doing it to earn their own money. So they shouldn't be they shouldn't be exempt from criticism by any means.
I mean, are they even earning that much? I mean, Dr. Disrespect, for example, he used to create games, he used to create maps, during Advanced Warfare, and he said when he was doing it, they had to live in San Francisco because that's obviously where Sledgehammer was based, or around that area. Him, his wife, and I think his kid were all living in like a one-bedroom apartment because that's all they could afford in that place, because it's, you're not earning a lot of money, and now he's earning like $500,000 a month.
Well, that's what I mean, but he, I guess he would never have been like a direct target for this stuff.
No. Whereas but still, those people are still going to get affected though. Just like if someone tweets something about one of our articles, the writer's still going to be, you know, obviously we tell them not to be offended, but people are still, naturally, if they read that comment, they're going to be somewhat offended.
By extension, you're more than happy to read a good comment, aren't you? So you got to take both.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the rough of the smooth. And it's for Vondahar, and to stay on Vondahar as the person, he's almost like the front man of the band. So he's getting paid the most, but he also suffers the most.
One thing that annoys me about this whole thing, though, right, is that this kind of leads into franchising, is that people always go 25 million for a spot on this game, like like those two teams have anything to do with each other, like the CDL have got any sort of involvement with Infinity Ward to make the game. It's completely got nothing to do with each other. Just because Activision are charging 25 million for a spot, which, let's be clear, is for probably like the next 20 years or in there, and that's what they hope it will be, at least the next 20 years. It's not just going to be this game. It's got no relevance this game is. And you pay 25 every time you look at the comments. 25 million.
And the 25 the 25 million will be staggered as well. They won't just pay it in one lump and be done with it.
And but it's that's their spot in the league for games, in multiple games and games and games. It's got nothing to do with just Infinity Ward. It's like, and people are going, oh, well, you know, they should have chose a better game to start franchising on. It's like Activision aren't going, oh, we're going to release this on the worst game. They don't know it's going to be bad.
Exactly.
But maybe the lack of, I don't know, coordination between all these big parts of Activision is a bad thing.
But it still is insane as well. 25 million or not.
The price? People are comparing.
The buy-in, but then like, you know, the game, and this seems to happen every year, that obviously they'll keep patching it, and then probably by, you know, month 10 or 11, it's probably closer. Well, you're probably as close as you're getting to the actual full version of the game, the version of the game that should have been available on release. But it takes 11 months of playing through glitches and, you know, all sorts of stuff that is affecting the integrity of the game. To actually come good. Like, you know, you look at other esports like LOL, you know, CS, they in their current version, you know, they've been around for ages. Things have been ironed out. Counter-Strike is, you know, is massive now, but it took a while for CSGO to pick up.
But even then, the developers still make issues. But do you not think the biggest problem, though, is that, so Activision, obviously the publisher, and they're publishing out, and they're kind of getting people like Infinity Ward or Treyarch to make the games. There's that kind of disconnect where someone like Riot, someone like Valve,
they're kind of directly
creating that game.
Well, you at least get the impression that everyone is synced, don't you? They're all moving to one goal. And
who do you blame? Do you blame Activision? Do you blame Infinity Ward? Do you blame Sledgehammer when they were around? Who gets it? Activision's fault?
The whole idea is, the problem is that they're not in sync, isn't it? That's why one of them will get it wrong, because they don't know, have a fucking clue what the other one's doing.
What infuriated me a while ago on Twitter, well, not even a while ago, a couple of months ago, let's say, there was a guy he was sort of having an argument with, you could see that Hector wanted to put him in his place, but he was reluctant to do it. But the guy was I can't remember if he either works for Activision now or worked for Activision, but this guy was the arrogance in his comments. And if you found my tweets with it, I basically said,
like, was it?
You arrogant bastard. I don't know who he is, because he's not someone who I knew prior to this.
What, from Activision?
From Activision. And he's either at Activision now or from Activision. And this guy really, really wanted to take credit for Optic and Nadeshot. He really, and he was basically saying, we've made you famous. So and for that reason, you owe us now. And that's why the CDL is a thing, because you owe us, because we made you famous. And now it's time to get our cut.
Imagine Coca-Cola saying that to their audience. My God.
And that ignores all the stuff with, like, it ignores all the reverse marketing that's come in. So, you know, the different, you know, what Nadeshot, Optic, what all these players have done for COD to boost COD's profile that's led to sales and all that stuff.
It's also small thinking. The second that anyone tried to own football, the second that football would not become what it was, because it is owned by the community. It's not owned by whoever, you know, people back in the day in the 1800s were kicking a ball around, you know what I mean?
But like, so for this guy, obviously that's his mindset. I don't know if that's mirrored across the whole of Activision. I wouldn't like to speculate, but the fact that even one person thinks that they should have been getting a cut from day one. Yeah. And it was the arrogance. It wasn't just the cut. It was the fact that he was saying in such a smug way, and it was clear that this wasn't the first time he'd voiced these things, that I own you. And eventually he went back a bit on it, but you could tell he believed that. But you know, I think a lot of this is almost like, yeah, we are coming for our cut. And not only that, we've been footing the bill for the last few years. It's time that you guys foot the bill. And yeah, and so as a result, everyone's bought into the league.
You can't. That's not a bad thing. The fact that they're asking basically for contribution by some of the big organizations, though, to help fund it. If it is a shared responsibility,
if it's going to be as big as they think them. It's going to, if they say it's going to be, then it's in theory it's a bargain.
It also locks them two teams in, though. There's an incentive for those teams to grow with the league as opposed to growing independent of a league.
Well, that was, you know, for years, one of the top casters, he was always saying, he always thought franchising had to happen because it was so inconsistent with the teams, different teams in it all the time. I mean, you know, that's the biggest inconsistency is the fact there's a new game every year and the varying quality and, you know, and
they don't
game
dress
play.
That,
do they? No, exactly. So, you know, it's something that they could fix on their end, but that's never going to happen. But yeah, I mean, going back to the 25 million thing, you know, they haven't paid $25 million for this specific game, but it would still be frustrating as an organization to, you know, it's not going to be cheap to do this for this year. You've still got to, all the liabilities involved, you've still got to foot this big roster. You know, you've still got to have your managers, your coaches, your facilities.
Oh,
you've got to put on a game. But, you're going to lose money on it.
Yeah, but the argument as well in the reverse is that all these teams have raised investment off the back of it, which has increased the profile of their team. It's basically got them money to spend not just for the league, but elsewhere. So arguably, but the league coming in along has given the incentive for these investors to give these organizations a big chunk of money that they can also use for exercises outside of the league, but mainly the league. So there is an argument there.
You could argue that you don't have to buy in.
Well,
that's why Nadeshot didn't buy in, wasn't it? Because I mean,
yeah, because obviously, his analysis of the benefit cost wasn't worth it. But for some teams, this will have made them go from middle tier obscurity to now high profile, or they would hope.
Yeah, at least on the Forbes list, which obviously we discussed in the last episode, which I assume everyone watching has watched intently.
Yeah. So yeah.
Well, it's, you know, they're doing a lot of interesting things with the franchise. I mean, obviously, they're no longer going to be doing, you know, shirt sales. You don't have control of your own shirt sales. I can't remember what we heard was the deal with that, but there's some sort of revenue split across the league, isn't there?
Well, yeah, they can't. So basically, for the first few months, loads of teams have been selling their own merch. But come I think, at the start of next month, start of January, then teams aren't. They have to then sell jerseys and merch that's basically uniform across the board, so it's all going to look pretty similar but with a different badge. Well,
we already know from a couple of people that, as in team owners, they're planning on diffusing a clothing line that looks similar to that but is different enough that they can tie and sell it, which is absolutely what it
should
be doing.
Look at FaZe, for example, right? So obviously they've Atlanta FaZe is what they've called the team, and they've somehow managed to get the FaZe name in there even though it's not part of FaZe Clan. So FaZe will still sell all their jerseys, they'll still sell all their merch, collabs, etc. But just when it comes to specifically Atlanta FaZe gear, that'll be then any sales of that will then get shared across all the other teams. Teams that probably aren't going to be as popular, like Florida, no offense Florida, they're not going to be as popular just based on the players they have, the branding, everything. They're not going to be as popular, but you know, they're still going to benefit from Huntsman or
Optic. Is it equally shared?
Yeah, equally shared across, I believe, yeah.
That's why I think Hex was complaining, wasn't it?
Yeah. I understand to a degree sharing it. I mean, in a way, this is not online society. Sharing the money is socialist versus capitalist. But at the same time, it doesn't really reward anyone to go out and, you know, graft the tits off to make a load of sales. Because, you know, like using football, for example, it was always a big thing that you sign a big marquee player, you're going to make a lot of shirt sales, you're going to, you know, earn your money back. It doesn't encourage someone to lure in a scump.
We don't know. There may be performance goals internally that they have to achieve.
And also,
for all we know, that if one wasn't selling anything, something tells me
the others will come together and say, lads, step it up. There'll still be weaker teams in the league who just, you know, they won't do as much to build the brand.
A rising tide lifts all ships and that kind of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah,
all that jazz.
I mean, we have been a touch critical across the board on this podcast, but you know, as much as anything, we've been in Call of Duty one way or another, You know, for years and years, I don't want to be, you know, saying we don't get credit for, you know, being OGs, because you see a lot of people out there who are people saying, oh, you know,
as I said, we've got a profile, obviously, in the scene. Anyone's always more than welcome to come and speak to us and debate and our counter argument against it. And even if we don't give the response that you want, so what? They cannot avoid criticism, because no. There's nothing worse than that, right? And especially in this day and age where the leagues are controlling. You know, everything within it, you know, the competition, you know, and to some extent part of the teams, the last thing they want to be doing is showing to be avoiding that. We're in the West. We're not in communist
exactly.
societies.
Exactly. You can't
be exempt, you know,
from,
I mean,
criticism, as we said. You know, at the end of the day, people are still profiting off it. And we, as people, you know, who've been around Call of Duty for ages, we do want what's best for the game ultimately. And, you know, we do take it personally when a game comes out, and I don't want to say it's shit, but you think it's not as good as it could be, or it's not as good as previous iterations of the game.
Yeah.
You know, as fans of the esport itself, and as people who've invested thousands of hours in helping towards build its profile, and I'd like to say contributed a lot. You know, it's sad to see it when it isn't as good as you feel it could be. And, you know, there's evidence to suggest that people, that there have been better Call of Duties before. I mean, I don't think anyone would say this is the best Call of Duty. In fact, I think you'd struggle to find anyone who would say that. So
yeah, I've never heard anyone say it's the best Call of Duty, almost anyone.
No.
No one that's not working. But you know what's annoying as well is that, again, this is why you should just never trust the first impressions, because when this game was first shown, you know, when people were looking at it, they were like, oh my God, back to, you know, real, like, modern day boots on the ground. This is going to be amazing. Because even Black Ops, it was still kind of...
Black Ops 4 was still
a little bit futuristic, even though it was kind of meant to be set slightly in the past, blah, blah, blah. But with this game, everyone was kind of banging on about it, being realistic. You know, it's going to be an amazing for S&D, this, that, and the other. And then we're back to the start again, where everyone just hates it again. So, I don't know. And this game, I just feel like...
The thing is, it's gone from loving to hate it to hating, because
it's not worth loving. This is definitely some of the worst reception.
Every year, Call of Duty comes under criticism at the start. And it'll be down to the fixed cycle and the fact that they've got so many bugs that they probably can't iron. They probably don't even realize a lot of the bugs exist until it's in the hands of the masses.
Yeah.
And then it's pointed out to them, and a small team of QA testers just could never find that. And you got to accept that it's going to take a little bit of time to, you know, iron out those bugs. But it's when it's so widespread and when people are clearly just not having fun. You know, I know a lot of, and admittedly this is anecdotal, but I know a lot of people who love Call of Duty who just don't love this game.
Yeah.
And, you know, who've invested hours into the series year in, year out. But they're playing this one and they're like, no, it's just, there's just too many things that are disappointing about it.
There you go. Well, should we wrap this one up?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for watching the second live episode of the Deserter Podcast. We'll be back for episode 3 in the very near future.